You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
We've printed documents, we've printed prosthetics, and now we're printing food. What is this world coming to? It sounds like science fiction, but 3D food printing is very real. And it's reimagining what we eat, how we eat, and who gets to eat. From custom meals designed for specific health needs to the possibility of ending hunger through precision engineered nutrition, 3D food technology is stirring pots across the globe, and not just in kitchens. But with every new innovation comes new questions. Will it be safe? Will it be affordable? Will it be delicious? And what does that mean for the farmer, the food lover, and the future? To help us navigate this brave new world, we're joined by Professor Oluwafemi Adebo, a global food systems expert, published researcher and lecturer at the University of Johannesburg, whose work bridges tradition and technology, science and society. He has spent years studying how innovation can transform what we consume, and tonight he brings clarity, depth, and an African lens to a conversation we all need to be a part of. Prof, welcome to the show.
Good evening, and thank you very much for having me. Quite clearly.
Yes, we can. And if there are issues, I will definitely let you know.
That's great. Thank you,
Prof. And before good evening we, to the we listener, yeah, please. Yeah. Before we continue, why should this topic not shock us? Before we ask you questions and we have a nice fat chat, why shouldn't this conversation shock us?
Well. As you said in your introduction, we are living in interesting times.
Sure.
Understandably so, because the world is changing.
Yeah.
Things are moving really fast. Now I can talk to my phone and I get a response.
Yes.
There is Siri and the like.
Mm.
So, indeed, I think it's saying to us that technology is something that is changing how we live, how we
yes.
do things, how we think, and it permeates into every stage of life. And in this context, food science and technology.
Mm. And when did this whole phenomenon start? Because it was very recent that I found out about it. When did it start?
Well, 3D food printing itself, it's fairly new.
Okay.
Probably right about 10, maybe at most, less than 20 years.
20 is not new. How did we not know?
It's fairly new. So it started as a concept,
mm.
but it's gradually now being adopted in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
But the truth is, in the continent, we're still lagging way far behind.
Yeah.
So it's a technology that's it's not fully in the market yet.
Yeah.
But it's gradually been implemented in different spheres. In space, for example, 3D printers are now being taken to space.
Oh, wow.
To support missions. Space is not like you courier, you want to send stuff, so food
no.
from place to place. So
yeah.
they really plan for it because they stay there for quite a long time. So I'm just saying that it's been here, but it's really failing it.
Okay, let's get into the nitty-gritties, and I want us to start with the wild one. If I were to walk into a kitchen with a 3D food printer right now, what could I realistically expect it to make? Are we talking gourmet meals or just mashed peas paste shaped like a steak?
Well, I think the latter part will be much more practicable.
Oh, no. No gourmet meal?
Particularly because with 3D food printing, the type of ingredient, it's something that plays a significant role. And it best work with substances that are soft, paste-like form or purine, which can then be printed. So yes, you can print, but hence you can print something like a paste-like form. In fact, there are different research and stuff that have been that I've done with, for example, 3D printed meat is available. 3D printed fish is available.
This is crazy.
In the market. So yes, indeed, pretty much you need to have an ingredient that is soft, that is puree-like. Then you should be good to go with some technicalities to also consider.
Yeah, Prof, I have a preteen niece. And every time I speak to her, she says, Nani, come on, you're using big words. I don't understand what you mean. And so I want you to pretend that you are speaking to her right now and you are explaining this whole concept to her. What is 3D food printing? What are the elements that make it what it is? How can laser produce food for me? Explain it to me like I am a 12-year-old Rudo.
Okay, so for you to 3D print, there are a couple of considerations. Starting with, you obviously need a 3D food printer.
Yes.
Meaning a 3D printer that can print food. There are 3D printers out there but that print other things, but specifically in the context of food, you need a 3D food printer. That's one.
Okay.
Also, you need to have an ingredient which we refer to as the food ink, which could be anything basically. It could be your honey worms. It could be your mashed potatoes.
Okay.
It could be your mashed chicken. It could be anything, basically.
Yeah.
Which serves basically as your food ink. But obviously, there has to be a number of considerations for your ingredient. Meaning you have to ask yourself, why do you actually want to print?
Okay.
And then subsequent to that is you load your puree into the 3D printer.
Okay.
Then there are certain parameters you obviously have to control, the temperature, the speed, how many layers you want to print. Then you can print it out. It doesn't sound as easy as I say, but pretty much you print it out. Then subsequent to that, you can even post-process it. You can bake your printed product. You can enter it. And put it in a microwave.
Okay.
But if your ingredient is also ready to eat, immediately after printing, you can actually consume it.
Okay. What problem are we solving with 3D food printing? Because it sounds like a rich people's situation. What are we actually solving for?
So it's a couple of things.
Yeah.
One, from a context of food waste alone, for example.
That's a good
there
one.
There is a lot of food that has been wasted in restaurants, leftovers, even in the food industry. You go to certain stores, for example, you don't expect to see carrots that are looking funny, for example.
Yes.
It doesn't make it less edible, but consumers just don't like carrots that are looking funny.
No.
Because there is an expectation on how carrots should look like. So unfortunately, those carrots that are not looking like they should ends up as food waste.
Yes.
And that in itself, I mean, carrots, it's a food that is very high in vitamins, for example. If you puree that, that in itself is a food ink. That can be used as an ingredient for food for 3D food printing. That's just one.
Yes.
Things like your insects, for example, your algae, for example, certain legumes that are very, very rich in protein. Mokwani worms is very high in protein. But I'm one of those who won't eat Mokwani worms as Mokwani worms.
Oh, me too, Prof. Give me zero in that department.
There you go. You have people also with crickets and the likes. But these are food that are readily available, very high in proteins, and should be forming part of our diet.
Yeah.
instead of over relying on the expensive sources of proteins, like your meat, for example, these insects can be turned into food ink. These very unique food sources can be turned into food ink, 3D printed, and get a 3D printer to yield certain products.
Yeah.
That can then be subsequently consumed. So, in a sense, it's helping to add value to some of these food sources that we are not appreciating.
Yes.
It's assisting with food waste. I just earlier mentioned it's been used in space. For example, where you don't have the luxury of a spaza
of a pick and pay
next to you somewhere, or a pick and pay or something somewhere. But not only that, even military missions.
Yeah.
Because, they go into those odd places, having to defend the country and a whole lot of that. They don't have the luxury of having stoves.
They don't.
Or having certain cooking. You know the luxury of what we get at home in our kitchens. They don't get that.
Yeah.
So these are technologies that are assisting in that. And overall, I really advocate for 3D food printing as a tool that is actually assisting us to repurpose our food in a better way.
Yeah.
Presenting food in innovative ways, in ways which normally people would not consume. And in addition to that, it's used in hospitals, for example.
Okay.
Let me give you a very good one.
Please do.
There is something called dysphagia.
Something called?
Which is dysphagia.
Okay.
It's a medical condition having to do with difficulty swallowing. It's usually elderly people.
Yeah.
But there have been studies and indications that infants, in fact, are also affected by that.
Oh, wow.
So, but the point is, what happens with those set of people is that they rely only on stewed food.
Yes.
So you can imagine cooking your rice and mashing it, because they can't swallow.
They can't.
The throat, it's a challenge. So unfortunately, when they see those stewed food, by default, they tend to lose appetite. They are eating because they need to eat, not necessarily because the food is good enough for them to eat.
Yeah.
And by so doing, they often lack basic nutrients because they are not taking adequate level of or amount of nutrients they should be consuming and all of that. And that's where 3D food printing comes in, for example.
Oh, wow.
Because it allows of the possibility of a combination of these different nutritional needs of theirs and presenting food in a way that is actually appealing to them. So it's in fact, things like personalized nutrition, for example,
it's another
good one where you can tailor make food depending on the nutritional needs.
Yeah.
Your nutritional needs is different from mine, for example. And we don't have the Pick n Pay or Woolworths and the like that will cater for you as an individual or for me as an individual. We have over 50 million people in the country.
Yes, and mass production is the order of the day.
There you go. Yeah. So, hence, and that's also where 3D printing comes in the health side of things. And the concept of digital gastronomy also comes into play, where you tailor make food for people depending on their nutritional needs. So, holistically, it contributes to solving these challenges of food insecurity.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's not a magic wand that will solve every other problem of ours.
And I'm so glad you're mentioning that, right? Because this to me sounds like it's ticking all the innovation boxes, and I love it. I'm here for it. But for someone who's listening in a township or rural area, perhaps, this might sound like a far-fetched luxury, like I did mention earlier. So can 3D food printing really serve everyone, or will it widen the food inequality gap that exists today?
So, the long answer to that is yes, it's applicable to everyone.
Okay.
But the short answer would be, as it is, maybe not yet.
Yeah.
particularly considering the cost even of a 3D printer.
Yes.
A 3D food printer, actually, specifically that.
I mean, a printer is expensive for somebody in the rural area. Copy printer. You know. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So it's not something that everyone can afford to have right now.
Yeah.
Because a very good printer, you're probably looking at it from like 30K upwards.
That is crazy.
Which is a lot. Hence, I'm saying a very good one. So perhaps in rural settings, and a very good example of what we're looking at is one of the villages where the University of Johannesburg has actually adopted.
Oh, lovely.
As our societal kind of community project, where you can have a 3D printer in such a community, and it can actually serve a whole lot of people.
Yeah.
So in that kind of approach, yes, it has far reach for the whole village, but individually, we're not there yet.
Yeah. If you can, Prof, can you tell us about the project? It sounds really exciting, because I was also thinking about some of the most exciting things you've seen 3D printing food do that made you stop and say, okay, we are about to do something here. So can you tell us more about the project and some other work, exciting work that you've possibly done?
So for us, for example, we work with underutilized food sources.
Yeah,
I've mentioned the issue of mutton worms, for example, which is very high protein. But I mean, not everyone can eat it.
No, sir.
So we're transforming that into a food ink and getting it into a product. We've worked with snacks, for example. There's one of my students who just recently, almost finalizing his postgraduate degree, where we have actually used Mopani worms as if we have prepared that into a food targeting dysphagia patients.
Yeah.
Because we looked at their nutritional needs. They need calories as well. They need proteins as well. They need macronutrients in terms of your vitamins, in terms of your minerals. And looked at all of that holistically and felt, let's use that to design a food ink where, and indeed we've been able to prepare a product. We've used orange flesh sweet potato, for example. We've used bambara nuts. We've used cowpeas. I have another student working on sorghum, finger millet, cricket, all gearing them towards 3D food printing. In fact, I have a student who is adding moringa to a 3D printer. Yes, because
okay.
I mean, it's moringa is seen as a miracle plant because of these numerous benefits in there. So again, we are leveraging on that. So, why don't we get that into this 3D food printed product?
Yeah.
So that if you and I can grab a snack, or a 3D food printed snack, or 3D food printed cookie or biscuit, we know it's embedded with functional things that our body need in terms of nutritional and health-wise.
Yeah.
And perhaps, you wanted to say something?
No, continue, please.
Something else I wanted to add. Yeah, I wanted to add that a very interesting study we also did.
Yes.
Because at a point we stopped and thought that what's the acceptability going to be like actually
for
3D
sure.
printing?
Yeah.
In a South African context. And a study we recently published actually. Actually told us that indeed it looks like the South African populace are willing to accept 3D food printing. But there were two things that stood out for us. One, people are still afraid. There's a concept called food neophobia. Neophobia itself is the fear of new things.
Okay.
And in this context, now food, because 3D food printing, like you said, it's a new concept.
Yes.
So people are still afraid. But the feedback we got was that if the benefit is clearly communicated, close to 300 consumers that we sampled and we had feedback from them were actually willing to try and consume and purchase 3D food printed foods.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. And how do we classify this food, right? Because we know that we get beef from a cow, we get legumes from, you know, from this type of crops. How do we classify 3D printed food?
It's just like any innovative food product. Like I said, the type of food at the end of the day is dependent on the original ingredient. So it's a very good example. Again, is there was something controversial that happened, I think, about 2 years ago or thereabout. I'm not sure if you've heard of veggie burger.
No.
Well, there was something, and it was a big thing in the food space in the country.
Okay.
Where people felt, I mean, the vegetarians actually now, who were advocating in a sense for a veggie-based burger. And there were people who are the meat lovers who felt, no, but if a burger is a burger, there is a characteristic of a burger that you and I know. But if you want to call it a veggie burger, then that means it's plant-based entirely.
Oh,
you
are we talking about beyond meat?
It's something along those lines.
Okay. I'm with you.
So, but I'm trying to get to the point of saying that.
Yes.
PPP footprinting has been used to actually print plant-based meat, quote unquote. So your patties, for example, that will replace those your beef patties or chicken patties and the likes that you have in those burgers. So that, for example, it could be, of course, vegetarian and a kind of base diet, which 3D footprinting has come into play. But my point back to the original question is saying it's dependent on the individual.
Yeah.
And then subsequent classification can be done in that context.
Now, tapping into that, one can argue, but I can just mesh my thing here at home. I can puree at home. What's the need for an entire printer when I can bring all these ingredients together and make something with a blender or something like that? What sets this innovation apart from the things we already have?
That's a very, very exciting question that I usually get at times. So, the uniqueness of 3D printing is the additive nature of it. It's in fact, it's called a layer-to-layer manufacturing process.
Okay.
Unfortunately, if you try to puree and try to do it yourself at home without a 3D printer, you won't get the structural integrity a 3D printer will give you.
Okay.
So, in fact, that's one big thing. The next thing also is that with a 3D printer, you get the possibility of shapes, of designs that you would not get if you also do it at home. So, for example, I can draw the shape of the South African flag.
Mm-hmm.
I can draw the shape of South Africa as a country.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, basically. Provided I have a digital design.
Yeah.
I can actually get to do it.
Prof, I'm just trying
to allows, it gives that possibility of multiple designs.
I'm just trying to eat,
just
prof.
To wrap up, a final one is the possibility also of not only those designs, not only of the additive nature, but you also get a cooking possibility during 3D printing as well. So it's those three unique features that unfortunately you might not be able to get in one single system all at once.
Yeah. So the thing that we have now, especially in our African context, is that many communities rely on indigenous crops and traditional meals, right? So how does 3D printing respect, replace, or rewrite that heritage? You had mentioned earlier that sometimes there's a fear of embracing these new innovations, especially this. So how does this complement or even challenge what communities, African communities, are used to?
Thank you very much for that question. Hence, in fact, again, my advocation for 3D printing in conversations is, instead, I call it a fusion of the old and the new.
Okay.
As it is, some of our raw materials, those local food sources, are not even making it to the mainstream market. Hence, it's so 3D printing should be seen as a tool, as a technique that is actually helping us let those food sources gain prominence, helping us push them into the mainstream market, potential for exports. And all of this has its own socioeconomic impact at the end of the day. So it's not here to replace tradition, no.
Yeah.
Instead, it's there to enhance,
commercialize it.
Exactly. What we have in existing, make it more fancy, make it more cool, make it more innovative.
Yeah.
And there are potential economic benefits at the end of the day that you can possibly also get. So yes, tradition is there. I mean, in what we do, hence I'm saying we use what we currently have in the country. What are those undoubtedly undervalued resources that people are not even thinking about? And then you work with them. So yeah.
So it's essentially saying that a Barack, not a Barack Obama, a Michelle Obama wouldn't wear umbhaco, which is the African traditional attire, but she would wear Maxhosa, which is the brand by an African guy. So that's
There
the
you go.
wavelength we're at.
There you go. I mean,
Got
it's like your traditional Zulu dress
it.
and making that into a three-piece suit, for example.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, there you go. I mean, people would. I mean, people rock suits every now and then to the office. And in that form, perhaps you opening up another market. Maybe I'm giving someone else an idea on air
I hope we are. I hope we are. So here's the thing with food, right? It's culture, it's texture, it's smell, it's memory. So can a printed plate ever give us mama's stew or that crunch of magwinya or something sacred lost in translation?
The long answer to that will be yes, and that will be linked to creativity. So how creative are you in selecting the choice of your food ink, for example? It really depends on the base ingredient that you're actually imputing into the 3D printer itself. So once you can play around with all of that, yes, indeed you can. In terms of the texture, because of the nature of 3D printing, remember you're feeding it a theory. It can kind of achieve a bit more in terms of texture, solidifying things, depending on your 3D printing process. But if you really do want a proper crunchy or crispy or kind of texture, then you need to post-process. That's where I mentioned earlier on your baking, your air frying, your microwave, and the likes.
It also sounds to me like a set of ingredients in my hand and a set of ingredients in a chef's hands will give completely different results based on how we finesse the ingredients.
You're absolutely right. Remember, 3D printing is just a tool that you need. So well, for lack of a better word, your culinary skills, your creativity definitely plays a significant role.
That's interesting.
So like you rightly said, with you and the chef, it definitely should be different. I'm not saying you're a bad cook, though.
I'm not saying that either. There is a lot of fear about synthetic food, GMOs, fake meals. I mean, a case of listeriosis is still being fought with Tiger brands, right? How do we build trust around 3D printed food, especially in societies that are already skeptical of food safety?
So there is a lot indeed, like you rightly said, in terms of 3D printing. I see a lot that needs to be done in terms of regulation, in terms of the ethics, in terms of all of those details. Yes. But the fundamental concept of food processing, or perhaps let me enlarge that a bit. If you look at the definition of food security, safety of food is the key word there. Safe food. So coming down to the concept of food science and food technologies, the safety of food is extremely important in whatever we do. So, right from your ingredient, the preparation of your ingredient, to you getting your final product, safety has to be ensured.
It has to
So
be.
it's irrespective of whether you are using a 3D printer or not. Even if you're preparing your food at home,
For sure.
if you don't wash properly, if you don't wash your hands before preparing them, if you don't cook them properly, even after cooking, contamination can still happen. If you just leave it in there. So it's all of those considerations, just like you would in any manufacturing setting. Provided all of those are done properly, then it's safe like any other food.
You alluded to it just now in this response, but what are some of those ethical dilemmas that come with this technology? And are there some guardrails in place?
So, I think the major one really is what is happening in. So if you picture a 3D printer sitting at home, the one of the things that people have raised, perhaps, for example, is how effective is the cleaning of the 3D printer.
Mm.
So if I use a 3D printer to produce product A, for example, how sure am I, how effective is my cleaning process before the next batch?
Mm.
That's one. Two is, if it's a product that will be post-processed, that is great. But if not, if it's a product that people have to consume immediately, then the sanitation really has to be top-notch.
Yeah.
So things like that are the major issues, for example, when it comes to 3D printing. The other issue is not, I might have mentioned it, not everything would print. There are certain components that is expected in a food ink, else it will just not print.
Oh.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
So you need to have certain constituents like your starches, which are naturally occurring in certain food products.
Mm.
But in insects, for example, it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning that you might not be able to just make an insert to a paste and then print it.
Mm.
Because structurally, the composition of insects lacks certain food components that will give it that structure after 3D printing.
Oh, wow.
So the question then of which additives do we use? And I'm sure all over the world, there is also the concern of now we are adding too many things to food. And all of those conversations are popping up here and there.
Mm-hmm.
That's also something that keeps on going in 3D food printing also.
Mm-hmm.
To say, what limit do we give these additives that we're adding to food? Which types do we use? What are going to be the concerns? How much of it are we also adding as well?
Mm-hmm.
Those are conversations that are happening. But at the end of the day, in a South African context, and as it is in other parts of the world, there are regulations.
Mm-hmm.
That guard the use of additives and all of that.
Yeah.
But in the context of 3D printing itself, plus when there is still a long way to go.
Yeah.
But there are certain fundamentals that guard every food processing operation.
Mm.
So in a sense, we covered, but there is still a bit more to do.
There's still a bit more to do. You know, I love that you're so passionate about this, because I do want us to get to the heart of this conversation, right? The heart of the matter. If you personally had unlimited funding and freedom, how would you use 3D food printing to solve hunger in Africa today? And you may not need to make it specific to you, but what are the opportunities that exist for us in order for us to solve hunger in Africa using this innovation and this technology?
I think perhaps I will start with engaging with those remote rural areas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What are those raw materials that are bound there?
Yes.
A very good example, marula fruit.
Mm.
I don't know if you know marula.
I do.
I think it's from Limpopo, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain parts of the country where the fruit is so much that it actually it goes to waste.
Mm.
So looking at that community, for example, can we get this as a raw material?
Mm.
Explore the composition of it. See what we can add to it, make it into an effective food ink, and address food insecurity issues in that kind of community. Because then with the concept of 3D food printing and the knowledge of the kind of food ink, you can print nutritious products that will be applicable to the young, to the old, to the middle class, and the likes, everyone in that sort of kind of space. But not only that, if one can do that effectively, as I earlier mentioned, there is an economic impact that also get into the mix.
Always.
Because if it's working there, then perhaps other stores, your campaigns, your Woolworths, your ShopRite, might even pick up interest in that.
Mm.
So you're not only solving food security issues in that kind of community, you are also creating a value chain that also has its own economic benefit.
Mm.
So for me, indeed, that's one. And talking from a more national point of view, again, will be to look at your underutilized food produce. We're not using sorghum as much as we should. We're not using finger millets as much as we should. We're not using cowpeas as much as we should. I mentioned mopani worms and the likes as much as we should. How many products can we get using 3D food printing from this that can also make it to the mainstream market? And of course, I already mentioned the issue of health.
You did.
Specifically engaging with hospitals,
Which
dysphagia, even old age homes, where you also get some of these elderly people who might be suffering from dysphagia, as I earlier mentioned. How can we help them? Because not only are they suffering from the pains and the likes from dysphagia, and this mushy food is not as appealing to them, but in so doing, their body is actually lacking the nutrients in it. And which has its own other implications, perhaps short term, long term, and the likes.
Yeah.
And again, coming to that space using 3D footprinting to also contribute to solving that.
You know, this might sound weird, but in my heart, I'm just like, oh, I wish these big retailers wouldn't catch on to this. And I know that because of the education that still needs to go into it, they'll probably catch on to it before the people on the ground do. And here's why. So I'm a mining engineer by qualification, right? And the thing that frustrates me about coming from a mineral-rich continent that is Africa and a mineral rich country that is South Africa, it pains me that we mine and we dig and we get all these minerals, but we don't beneficiate. So what happens is we take our minerals, we export them to countries that refine them and do all the processing. And when it gets back to us, it comes back at 10 times the price that we sent it to them. And for me, that hurts me because we are not getting the full benefit of what we have here on our soil, right? Or under our soil, at least to be more correct. So thinking about what you're saying now about all the natural foods that already exist in these rural parts of our country and our continent, this whole technology for me is the beneficiation of agriculture and crops. And I'm really thinking about a way where the people who have taken the time to plant, to till the soil, to harvest, can actually fully benefit from the entirety of the process of their food being harvested and processed via 3D food printing.
In fact, you've put it in a very nice way. The word beneficiation is indeed the right way of saying that it's indeed a tool to benefit. To add value to those things we just see there. I think the mining context is a very, very, I think it's a perfect one, like you rightly said. We have these huge deposits of minerals, but unfortunately, it's been taken up to other parts of the world, processed there, and then sold back at times into
us.
The country. It's a very funny, dicey kind of scenario. But indeed, you're right. And it's something we could perhaps as a continent, as a country, need to look much more inwards into doing. Beneficiating what we have, adding value to it, most importantly for our benefit, as well. And of course, if we have excess, we can obviously export. And from an economic point of view, that's a win-win for everyone.
Yes,
100%. But indeed, it also has to benefit us.
Yes.
And in this case, nutritionally, health-wise, and the likes.
And on that vein, which is really the last question I have for you, what role then should African governments, universities, and even entrepreneurs be playing to ensure we're not left behind in this global food tech revolution?
So I think the first one will be significant investment. When it comes to research, that's South Africa. To be very honest, is actually one of those very few African countries who spends quite a lot when it comes to research. But much more, obviously, it's needed in that context, because if there is significant research, and I'm also balancing my argument here, there are other needs in every economy, in every country.
Yes.
Load shedding, now load reduction, what?
Yeah.
Potholes, Joburg.
I mean, water shortage. Endless.
Water shortage and all of that. So it's a mix of issues.
Mm.
But I'm just saying that, indeed, if there is much more investment in that regard, then it helps. But not only investment, carefully also making sure the investment in the research is able to translate to communities, is able to translate to products that can actually make it to the mainstream market as well. So it's translational kind of research where you say, yes, it's great, but you're also able to apply it in societies. And the mantra of our university is actually whatever we are doing should have societal impact. I think if much more can be looked at in that sense, in terms of your funding, in terms of the relevant stakeholders in that space, I really think we will achieve much more.
Yeah. And because you know so much about this topic than I do, is there a question that you feel I haven't asked you that you just need to speak on?
No. Honestly, we actually covered quite a lot of things. I think we've covered everything, basically.
Yeah.
Perhaps we'll wrap up. I'll just say there are exciting opportunities when it comes to 3D footprinting, just like any other new innovative technology. But most importantly, it's more about us rethinking how we have our food, how we produce it, how we present it, and how we make it available for everyone to achieve that goal of food security, which we are so much after.
Sure. I'm even thinking about how caterers and restaurants can actually scale.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely. And that's what is actually happening in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
There are restaurants that now have 3D printers and the likes.
So, mm-hmm.
So it's like I said, it's a new concept, very new, but the acceptance, the integration of it into our system, into our food system, in a South African context, it's really slow for now. But I think with more research, with such conversations we are having this evening, and much more we have in the pipeline in terms of our activities, I think we will get there.
Oh, we'll catch on. We always do.
So yeah, we'll see.
My people, if you've ever thought of science and food as two separate worlds, tonight's conversation should convince you otherwise. As Prof. Adebo has shown us, innovation doesn't just live in labs. It lives in every bite we take, every future we imagine, and every problem we dare to solve. Whether 3D printed food becomes our everyday norm, or it remains a luxury of the future, the real question is this: how can we use technology not just to feed people, but to nourish humanity? And in this moment, Prof, I really want to thank you, listen to this, for giving us something to chew on.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And thank you to the listeners.
Where can people engage with you if they wish to do so? And how can we learn more from you moving forward?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. My name is Oluwafemi Adebo. I'm a professor, like you rightly said, at the University of Johannesburg.
Yeah.
My profile, my email address is on the university website.
Yeah.
People can drop me an email, reach out to me, and we can take the conversation going from there on.
Oh, this was so insightful. Thank you so much for lending us your time and your wisdom. Thank you very, very much.
The pleasure.
Good night, Prof.
You too. Bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.